This is a Clock Shelves Podcast Network production.
Another episode of MCU and Me. As always, I'm Paul Casey, and I'm joined once again to cover Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. by
Sir Ellsworth Tallman.
Welcome back to the show, sir. Excited to continue this journey of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, of course, for those of you who may not be aware, and if not, why are you joining us in the middle of season one? That's a bit odd, but we welcome you anyway. But Ellsworth is watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for the very first time, and today we're going to be discussing season one episodes 11, 12, and 13, those being The Magical Place, Seeds, and Tracks. And I know it's been a little bit since you've watched these ones, Ellsworth, because you are, of course, a little ahead of where we are in the podcast rewatch, but I actually just got done watching them again just a few hours before we're recording this, and I gotta say, I was kind of a mixed bag with these, and one of the things we've talked about sort of over the course of this season so far is how a lot of people accuse this show of being slow and whatever, and, you know, not necessarily holding them. And I feel like these episodes were, there were parts that were very, very character driven, which I really liked. We got some answers, some very big answers, which of course lead to more questions, which in my opinion is what a good show does. But there were some other parts, I'm not going to lie, that had me just wanting to, like, look at my watch and see how much longer I had to put up with it. Would you agree?
I hate that scenario when you almost want to look away from the TV. Yeah, no, definitely. You know, and as we've been breaking these up into little sections and groups, you know, I feel like that's, if you do it that way, it will keep you kind of going, only because it is a mix of some good and some bad. I guess it's kind of like a roller coaster, you know, it's going up and down. But like you said, we got some really good character driven, some of our story arcs, you know, answered some questions, more questions. You know, this first episode, The Magical Place, you know, because we pick up with Coulson being kidnapped.
Yes, because the previous one, I think we talked about this in the last episode. The previous one was the, like, Christmas break. So there was, like, a mini cliffhanger there. And so now we come back, and as you said, Coulson has been kidnapped by these bad, we don't have a name for them, but the bad guys.
Right. And it's like all hands on deck kind of at S.H.I.E.L.D. to find Coulson right now.
We actually got a lot, well, not a lot, but we got some more answers about, you know, Tahiti and the magical place, you know, the whole concept there. And this was one that because I've seen this show previously. I saw it when it was originally on, but this is the first time I'm really rewatching it. And you being a first-time watcher, you know, I was kind of waiting because I knew what was coming. I'm interested to hear what you thought because, as we talked about in previous episodes, one of the big mysteries going into the show, if you were, you know, a huge fan of the movies that then wanted to check out, you know, as we're saying, this pocket, this corner of the MCU, the TV side, one of the big questions and mysteries was, well, what did happen to Coulson? How did he survive this? And then the show so far has set up this thing of he was dead for 10 seconds, he was dead for 40 seconds, he was dead for a few hours, and there's all sorts of mysteries and redirects, and I think we even talked about it in the previous batch of episodes where even he couldn't get clearance, or he didn't even have clearance to look at his own file and stuff. And in this episode, kind of right off the bat, to kick off what was the new calendar year, we got some bigger answers. So I'm very curious as to your reaction to what did happen to Coulson, you know, when he died post Avengers.
I was not expecting to get what I got. That's for sure. You know, this is, again, it's been a minute. This is, once he's inside the machine, this is where it shows the actual sweep around of the camera sweeps around and actually shows you, right?
With the brain. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. With the little robot. Okay. I was making sure this was the actual episode because it shows you Coulson and the camera does this like sweep pan around and you see it like the little things going off in his brain and, you know, keeping him alive or whatever it's doing, or erasing the memories, you know, because, that's what's obviously going on or whatever is happening in his brain at this point. But it's definitely was not what I expected. You know, I know even more. So, like, I further got even more surprised. But, yeah. You know, and the whole leading up to it, you know, I think, you know, how we get there even is really cool with him, you know, kind of wanting to find out. So allowing this machine to do what it needs to do, because it did not look like it was comfortable at all. It kind of seemed like it was a little painful of a process.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is so, as we said, he was, you know, to give kind of a brief plot recap, he was captured by the bad guys, something Poe and Reyna, the girl in the flower dress. And, you know, they're under orders from the clairvoyant, the mysterious big bad of the season so far. And they want to know what happened, you know, during the time that Coulson was dead. And Coulson keeps making comments about, you know, if this person or whatever is really clairvoyant, they would know. And it's, you know, the whole thing of, you know, nobody really is clairvoyant and whatever. And Coulson doesn't believe it. Poe actually ends up getting killed. And there's a note about this that I saw, which says that he is killed in this episode with the paralysis technology used by Obadiah Stane in Iron Man, which I completely forgot about personally.
Yeah.
And so then Reyna sort of takes over and she
uses compassion.
Yeah. Yeah. She convinces Coulson like, hey, don't you want to know what happened to, you know, cause, and he does.
She uses a backstory or something of herself.
Yeah.
Doesn't she? You just want, I forget. I just remember her using some kind of backstory or something.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And she convinces him to get into the machine, and it was very, you know, that was a very good time. Like that killing Poe, the clairvoyant, doing that was a great little turn, you know, a little sleight of hand for the clairvoyant, you know. Oh shit, he just killed off who we thought was like. I mean, this dude went through the trouble to break this guy out of jail, and now we're just killing him? Like, the clairvoyant is OG. He doesn't care about nobody. Like, that's how gangster he is. Like, I broke you out of jail, and you fucked up. Bang, done. Now we're going to go on to number two.
I'm not going to lie. Normally, I don't like when that happens in a TV show, when they introduce a character just to kill them a few episodes later. But I think because I like the character of Reyna, and personally, knowing where that character goes, I'm okay with it because it gives her more of a spotlight.
Right. And you know, that's, it gave her an origin and of almost, you know, and again, it puts her in the spotlight. And then at this point, we still don't know anything about the clairvoyant. I mean, and for him to do that, to kill his number one lieutenant, like, just that speaks volumes of what kind of man or person or being or whatever we are dealing with at this point.
Exactly. And that's the thing is, like you said, at this point, we don't know anything about the clairvoyant. And now we know, basically what we know is two things: ruthlessness, that's one, and number two, wants answers, and will right. use one, the ruthlessness, to get those answers.
Nailed it. 100.
And one of the things that I liked about this was throughout the episode, because we see Coulson sort of in that machine or whatever it was that was, like you said, causing him some obvious discomfort when he was having these flashbacks or whatever. But we would see, and it's something we've seen for a few episodes now, which is him in Tahiti, you know, yes. on the island getting, you know, a nice massage and some drinks and things like that. And we start, over the course of the episode, we start to see a little bit of a breakdown in this, you know, this mental image that he has of Tahiti. And then eventually we see the doctor who we had seen in the pilot episode, played by the late Ron Glass, who, of course, yeah. as I've mentioned many times before with, you know, regards to previous Joss Whedon-related things, one of the main characters on Firefly. And, you know, known for many other things, of course. But we
find
see
out
him...
how long he was really dead for.
What's that?
You find out how long he was really dead for when he talks to him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we see him there and we finally get that answer. And it's not just the thing that I liked was it wasn't just the answer of, you know, how long he was dead, which was days. We also get the answer, or it wasn't really a question that was asked, but it is more of a character development thing of, you know, he says Fury moved heaven and earth. He got doctors and scientists and all these things to do things that nobody should have done to bring Coulson back. We said about the little machine at Coulson's brain, and you know, it was taking away memories, and at certain points it was literally just stimulating his brain to keep him alive. All the while Coulson is there screaming, or you know, whatever, just let me die, like I just want to die. And the doctor regrets basically that they did this, and it's just now, and of course, unfortunately, now Coulson has to live with this reality of he shouldn't be alive. They did unspeakable things to ensure that he's alive, and he has, you know, kind of memories of Tahiti and memories now of the actual, you know, kind of surgical things that they did. And he kind of has to figure out a way to balance this while also being the leader of this team that he's put together.
Man, that was well put together. Well put together. Exactly. I mean, you couldn't have said, I mean, that's pretty much how it's going to be from, you know, from this point forward, learning that information, you know. And the doctor looked scared almost too, like he thought something might happen to him.
Well, to be fair, if you were telling somebody this and they were behind you in a car, you're from New Jersey, you know what happens.
I mean, Coulson got in the back seat, you know, he got in the back seat, of course, like, you know, you just wait for the gun just doesn't even come all the way up. You just see the head go forward. You hear the shot and the head go forward. But no, but you know, what we do need to point out too about this episode is, you know, Coulson's found by Skye, who, you know, kind of has to do it on her own off the grid throughout this episode. You know, she does have a little help from her friends, but, you know, that's on the low. But she does this through, you know, tracking that dude and stuff.
Yeah, because
to find Rain, she does all that shit to find the town. Because, you know, weren't they going in the wrong direction or something originally?
Yeah, because I have her name here. I would not have remembered if I didn't have the page open on my phone. But Victoria Hand, who, of course, we've seen several times. We saw her in one of the previous ones where they went to back to one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. facilities.
The hub.
Yeah, and she sort of takes over. And
yeah, this
she
is where she asks May.
Yeah, she doesn't want Sky on the thing. And, you know, it's obviously a May deal where she gives the truth. No, Sky would not be helpful here. And she does not necessarily belong here. And it's kind of the double bluff because she means that. She's not going to be helpful there. Only because she'll be more helpful doing her own thing and getting the real answers while S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing their protocol thing.
Right. No, 100. Like, I love, you know, I love how at first Sky's so hurt by this and like takes offense to it, you know, Fitz and Simmons give her the fucking little phone and she's like, oh, well, they got my back. But like she feels a certain way. And then, you know, then we find out that, you know, again, May plays chess. This woman is strategic. She is the cavalry for a reason. You know, she knows what she was doing. And that, like you said, it was that whole double bluff. And, you know, I loved that whole little kind of thing because, you know, their relationship's been hit and miss the whole fucking time because May hasn't really felt like, you know, she belongs there, so to speak. And, you know, that whole relationship's kind of not, you know, there's not a lot there yet, but what there has been has kind of been very hit and miss. So, you know, I like that.
Well, I also wanted to ask you, so in Sky doing this and sort of having her own, you know, solo mission in a way, we see that businessman that she had some dealings with several episodes ago. He comes back. Or no, is that this one or is that one of the next ones, I think? I'm getting a little ahead of myself here, I think.
Yeah, you're getting ahead. I know who you're talking about. You're talking about him. He's the next one. Nah, she follows. This is where she follows. I think we learn his name in this one. But she follows another guy because
yeah,
she goes to his house.
It's a different businessman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this episode, she goes to this business guy's house because she has the security guard fucking because she can't fucking use the keyboard. So she has to have somebody else type for her.
Well, this is where she that's what I was going to ask you was she dresses up as May, basically. And she, you know, she fakes a S.H.I.E.L.D. protocol thing to prove that, you know, by realistically involving herself with technology, that quote unquote proves that she's with S.H.I.E.L.D., even though she can't use technology or whatever. But I did want to ask you, because of, you know, May and Sky's relationship and whatever, what did you think about Sky sort of pretending to be May, and then there's even the little joke later on where May looks at her and says, "Nice jacket."
Yes, this is outfit. I do because of the whole this whole episode. Yes, I loved it because of what happened earlier with that whole like kicking off, and then so her impersonating May, you know, kind of shows one she was, you know. It's kind of a flattery thing and her taking a stab at May. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly.
Do you know, like, it works, but at the same time, like, she's kind of taking a stab, but at the same time, like, she's kind of channeling and being like May because she knows if she does that, she'll get what she wants.
It's imitation in both terms of flattery and sarcasm.
Right. And yes, you're right. And I really enjoyed it. And the line about that, about the jacket was very nicely put in there. You know, and I think the only other thing about this episode is how it really ends.
The Mike Peterson part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get to see that Peterson's still alive. You know, he's burnt up, missing a leg, and currently has the eye implant.
Yes, and I know that you're several episodes ahead and whatever, but I gotta ask, did you think, maybe you did because of the way that, like, Kevin and I kind of spoke about it in some of the early ones, but did you think that Mike Peterson would have become as big a character even in this season as he ended up becoming?
No.
Do you like the fact that he became a bigger character?
I do. I do because he's a character who struggled from the beginning with himself, because he's one of those guys who was trying to do the right thing and kept getting dealt that shitty hand, or felt like he wasn't taking quite responsibility maybe for some of his own actions, but kind of felt like he was. So he would do things with good intent that came out with us ending up where Mike Peterson is right now.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, because, you know, he had his boy in mind. And again, I know the future, you know, with that in mind going back, I guarantee you Mike Peterson would make some different decisions.
Yes. But still, I thought a very good way to end this episode. That's one of the things that I
It was a great way. I didn't see it coming. I thought, I was like, fuck, Mike, he died, man. I didn't see, like, you know, and I was like, damn, they set up, you know, because they were setting that character up. I was like, damn, and they just killed him off like that. So it was very, it was a nice surprise.
Well, that's one of the things that I like about the TV series. And the Netflix ones didn't, they weren't able to do it as much only because of the way Netflix goes, where they don't really play the end credits. They go right into the next thing. But when you would watch these on TV, there would be the final scene, and then sometimes, and I think they have it like when we, because here in the States, we're watching these via Netflix. And I think they have it sometimes where the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo will pop up, and Clark Gregg, who plays Coulson, will say, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will return in a moment or whatever. But I know on TV, that's how it is. Then there would be a commercial. Then there would be this final scene. Then the credits and, you know, previews for the next episode. And to me, that always seemed not dissimilar to what the movies do with the, you know, mid-credits and post-credits scenes. Now, obviously, it's not exactly the same because they don't have it play with the credits. It's right before the credits. But, like, the episode is over, and then they give you this little tease for something that's going to come up later. Or even if it was just, like we talked about in one of the early ones, where Fury shows up and he just makes the comment to Coulson of, like, you know, I'm spending so much money fixing this plane all the time or whatever, just like a humorous little scene. I like that they add those, you know, whether you want to call it a bonus scene or whatever. I like the fact that they add those because, again, it gives it a little bit of that cinematic feel like the films, but it also helps to set up future episodes, or just give you maybe a little levity before the actual, you know, credits and end of the show.
Oh, 100.
So then the next episode after that was Seeds, which for me, not bad, you know, but not good.
You know, it's kind of funny because I feel like this is a very Fitzsimmons episode, and you know, in one aspect, I mean, we do have a whole nother storyline going on with Coulson and May, but I feel like Fitz and this was like we were gonna get some Fitz and Simmons, and you know, they gave us this, and it was just kind of like
yeah. And it's and Fitzsimmons, you know, probably one of my favorite duos on the show, or, you know, what, like, characters overall on the show is those two. And so, yeah, just the fact that this one kind of fell a little flat. And it's, you know, we get, like you said, there is the May Coulson thing.
That's the only start of the, that's where we get all the meat that we need. that's where we get our like, that's where they find out about fucking, they go to Mexico and for the agent, and that's where they find more out about Sky.
Yep.
And that's you know, that to me, the stuff going on with Fitz and Simmons and them at the school is kind of just the, you know, episode of the week.
And that's the thing, right? It's like, so like I, and we talked about this a little bit with the hub and whatever. I like some of these sorts of episodes where we find out more about S.H.I.E.L.D. I think an episode at S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy, not bad. And, you know, the episode at the Hub, not bad. We got to know a little bit more. But I think it was just the fact that this, you know, the A story of this episode, which that being what happened at, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy and whatever, it was, like you said, the case of the week sort of thing. And I don't disagree with having that. We've talked about this both on air and off air with regards to this show and other shows that we like. You have to have, especially early in a show like this, you have to have your case of the week as normally your A story, and your B story is, you know, your serialized thing, which is exactly what happened here. But for whatever reason, it just sort of fell flat to me.
I think it was the kid Gil. He just didn't do it for me. You know, he's, you know, him and Fitz are supposed to, like, you know, be similar or whatever. You know, that's how they end up relating to each other. That it just, something about him just didn't do it. Like, just, I wasn't sold for some reason, like,
well, that kid, that actor, of course, you and I know him as Jack's son in season 6 of Lost.
Yeah.
Most people now know him, I think, the show, I've never watched it, so it might be the wrong show. It's a Netflix show. It's the, is it 13 Reasons Why?
Yeah, I think you're right. I've never watched it, but I think you're right. I'm like one of the few people who've never watched the show.
Yeah, same. Never watched it. No real desire to.
It doesn't strike me as, you know, people. And look, to each a cup of tea. And it might be a great piece of cinema. It could be excellent. It's just probably not my cup of tea.
I 100% agree. And I'm not saying the kid is a bad actor or anything, but
no, we just didn't do it for, like,
yeah.
And he had the, I get that they wanted the innocent look, but he just looks guilty. He looks guilty. It's like, even when he was getting frozen, I'm like, he's doing it to himself. He's still fucking guilty. This kid is the bad guy. I know it. It's written on his face. He's not innocent.
And they try to do the switch with the girl, right? Where the girl that Ward is playing pool with, you know, where
right.
They try to set it up so that she's the bad guy and whatever, and then that's when the twist is, oh no, they've been kind of planning this for a little while, and then she basically just disappears for the rest of the episode.
Other guy, it's the other kid.
Yeah. And, I don't know.
And this is where Quinn comes back into play.
Yes, yes.
Because he wants to buy the machine or whatever. This is where he comes back into play. With the whole machine getting turned on and shit going sideways.
But I think one of my problems with something like this, and this is something I had Steve on the Thor the Dark World episode, and I feel like one of the problems with this episode is a similar problem that I brought up with my opinion on that movie, is that these things happen, but unlike what we were talking, like I just said a moment ago, where, you know, like the post credits or the mid credits or whatever you want to call them, these bonus scenes maybe set up something to come about later or whatever. There is no follow-up, really, with the fact that they created a gigantic weather machine you know? And like, and there's no, I mean, it sets up, like you said, the business, Quinn, the businessman coming back in, and, you know, we see things with that going forward a little bit. But other than the fact that it was a way to reintroduce him, we don't see anything. We don't see any follow-up to what are you going to do at the school to make sure that none of your incredibly brilliant kids are actually not plotting to take over the world. What are you going to do about the fact that, you know, this gigantic weather machine happened? Part of this whole show is based on, not the entirety of the show, but part of this whole show is based on a gigantic portal opened up in New York City, and now everyone knows that there are these weird aliens somewhere on the other side of the galaxy, and we deal with the fallout from that in most episodes. Or, you know, somehow it kind of relates back to the Battle of New York or whatever. Right. Somebody created a weather machine in this episode. There's never a follow-up to it. And like I said, in Thor the Dark World, you know, people cross over to various parts of the galaxy and, you know, all the planets align and all that sort of stuff. And it's never talked about again. And I think that's one of my problems is now looking back at it, knowing that there's not really a follow-up to this other than, oh, great, the businessman is back in the picture. I think that's right. One of the things that bugs me.
No, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, it's the case of the week and it's a one-off case of the week. You know, nothing follows. So all the meat of it is Coulson and May in Mexico, which we get May drops the bomb on Coulson. We think he's, you know, and I love Coulson. He's like me. You don't think he's paying attention, but he is. You know, May drops the Ward and me are fucking sleeping together bomb. And then, you know, we find out that this whole cover-up has been because there were agents that went to China to check out an 084, which happened to be a child, and everybody in the village was dead, and they hid the child in the system, and the agent started falling off left and right.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we get that bit of information. So now we know two things. We know that Sky is this child, like we know this. This, you know, this that kind of just puts that together. And what we know is we know what 084 is an object of an unknown origin.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing I thought was kind of interesting was how, like, I believe it's in this one where she finds out this information as well.
Yeah, Coulson, right? Coulson towards the end of the episode, you know, May doesn't want him to, but he tells her.
And I like the fact that when her and Ward are at the S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy, he shows her the Wall of Valor. And how, you know, sort of everybody who's, like, given their lives and things like that, they end up there. She actually makes reference to Bucky Barnes. And, of course, yep. Within the concept of the timeline of the universe, that's going to come up again soon. Hint, hint for people. But when she goes back to that later on, when Coulson is explaining to May the fact that he told Sky all of this, and she takes it as sort of a positive that, you know, it's not so much that she never had anybody. It turns out she always had somebody or multiple somebodies watching over her, and she never even realized it.
Right. No, you're right. That was great. She was a little upset at first, but, you know, that's the initial reaction. But like you said, then she realized, you know, I was being protected this whole time. Like, wow. And that's a huge, that's huge. Like, that tells you a lot about that character, you know, especially for someone who this whole, up to this point has wanted nothing but answers and will do anything to get the answers. And, you know, keeps fighting for these answers and, you know, gets them, and there's still more questions, but, you know, takes the answers like a champ.
And that, and we talked, you know, how in the previous one, you know, there's the whole her being Sky versus May sort of thing, and how they you know, go back and forth, and, you know, she can't ever really read what May is feeling, and but then yet she imitates her a little bit later or whatever. And I feel like that was a very May-esque reaction. You know, she let the emotion in for, you know, a little bit, but then she realized there's this other twist that I can put on this in how I'll deal with it. Because no matter what, you know, you can't change the past. I can only, and it's something I think we could all learn as people, you know, you can't change the past. I can't do anything about what happened back then, but I can decide how I'm going to take this and focus on it for the future. And like Coulson said, not only does she look at it now as, you know, I actually did have people watching out for me, but she also took it as my life didn't end. My life is beginning now, because everything now is basically, I don't want to say a clean slate, but it is sort of a clean slate, because now she has, well, theoretically, we know a little bit more, you know, you having been a few episodes ahead of this and me knowing most of the series, we know it's not quite over. Spoiler alert for those who may not know, it's not quite over, but in her mind right now, it's over, and she can move on and not have this sort of burden of wondering what her origin is.
Yeah, it's not lingering over her head anymore. She can move forward.
Yes,
that's like you said, that's something a lot of us could take. You know, looking at things from a different perspective. I know it's hard a lot of times, but you know, putting things to bed and moving on is a great thing in life. You know, it really does. Not having that attachment holding you down or holding you back, because it really does. And, you know, we've seen, like you said, this is a clean slate for this character. We've seen this kind of hold her back in certain ways, because it's dictated a lot of what she's done or wanted to do, because she's wanted these answers. So now now that she has these answers, we have somebody with, you know, now how is she going to move? Now how is she going to operate? Now what, you know, what's her driving force and focus going to be? You know, she still wants some answers to some things, but it's not, you know, it's not the burning question of desire like it was before.
Right, exactly.
You know, and then to end this episode off, we have the boss of boss moves, Coulson calling Mr. Quinn, telling him, you know, you are on our radar. And then Quinn, of course, tells him that the clairvoyant says hello.
Which, like, that is the, like you said, the boss of all boss moves. But, like, that's, you know, you said before about May plays chess. I feel like that's a very sort of, you know, chess-like move on the part of the bad guys, is they were already expecting that phone call.
Maybe they weren't. Did the clairvoyant say hello, or did Quinn say that? Because he wasn't expecting that, and he said it to, you know, one up Coulson. We're never really getting. Like you said, it could be. Maybe the clairvoyant did know. The clairvoyant knows everything, does he not?
But not. We know not, because
I know we know not. So that's what, because I know not, that's what I'm saying. Maybe he didn't know. I mean, maybe he did, and he did tell him, hey, he's going to call, say hello. Maybe he didn't, and Quinn was like, fuck, the clairvoyant says hello. Because, yeah, you kind of get that kind of, like, cuts back to Coulson, and he kind of has a look in his face like he was thrown off.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's that we're never given that answer. So, in my mind, And you're probably more right. I'm just probably stretching because I like the fact that maybe they weren't expecting it and it was a quick line by Quinn, because then I feel like, damn, the bad guys are even a little smarter than I thought. They're quick-witted with it. You know, he got thrown off and it shows you that Quinn's not easily shook. And in, you know, a moment like that, he's got a fucking, he's got a boss up, one up answer. So, because Quinn's kind of, you know, he's kind of got some bossness about him. You know, we know he's working for the clairvoyant, with the clairvoyant, whatever the clairvoyant, you know, we know more down the line. But at this point, we know, you know, he's definitely in dealings with him. But, you know, he's definitely on a G5 or G6 or some shit by himself. So he's definitely a boss.
Yes, of course. but again, I think that was one of those things where it was a good way to end the episode. Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, because knowing that you have, you know, a bit more of the comic book knowledge than I do, when I was looking this up on Wikipedia, this episode, it listed Donnie Gill, the character that we said we didn't really feel anything for, except for the fact that you said you knew he was the bad guy all along. If you click on his page on Wikipedia, it takes you to Blizzard from the Marvel comics, which apparently is the name of different fictional characters appearing. The character is usually depicted as a member of Iron Man's Rogues Gallery. Now, do you know any, like, is this one of those instances, I believe Kevin mentioned it in one of the early ones, where they'll take a minor reference to the comics just as like a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge to those who know, but it doesn't really have anything to do with the comics?
Yeah, this is probably a really low wink, wink, little Easter egg, like pulled very far, kind of a little bit of a stretch, but if you really know your stuff, here you go. Here's your little wink, wink. But, you know, I mean, I'm not far enough, but this, you know, you would know this character doesn't seem to come back around.
Not as far as I remember, no.
So, you know what I mean? It's like probably just one of those one-off little wink, winks. Like, if you're really a big geek, here's, you know, a small reference for you, like nothing other than that, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sure when they're looking for names of characters and stuff like that, you know, that they're not going to use, you know, we're probably never going to use that storyline or those characters. You know, what are some names of these characters that we can use that are little, and because it has to do with the weather machine, you know, it's a little one-off wink, wink, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, like I said, like I said, I believe it was Kevin mentioned it in one of the early ones where it was just, like you said, like this one, it had to do with, you know, the weather machine and the freezing or whatever. So, okay, let's give him the name of, you know, one of the characters that is Blizzard in the comics,
right,
and whatever. But it doesn't really have anything to actually do with that character.
Right. Or, yeah, or a storyline that's going to have anything to do. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it seems to be what they do here and there, which is cool. I mean, it's a nice little thing to do. I mean, again, I would do the same thing if I was writing something like this and I have access to all those characters that, you know, have been written about over time, and so many of them aren't going to be used, or, you know, characters have had multiple different names. Why not use one of those names as a little Easter egg to the community that enjoys that?
And like I said, for me, as somebody who watches all of these and has a relative idea, I'm not going to at all say I'm completely knowledgeable or whatever, but I have a relative idea of Marvel Comics stuff, comics stuff in general. But it's a nice, like, kind of little added thing for me, because then, like, I'll see, you know, on Wikipedia or IMDb or, you know, maybe just a Google search or whatever, that character is a character from the comics, and it'll give me something to like read about for, you know, a good 5 or 10 minutes where I could be like, oh, okay, that's this character's history in the thing. And chances are I wouldn't have necessarily read about that character because it's, even though it's, you know, they, as the Wikipedia page said, it's one of Iron Man's villains. It doesn't seem like it's a big, one of the big villains.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it was like a nice like little thing to read for, you know, a few minutes where, oh, okay, this is the backstory. Or, oh, this is another character that had the name Blizzard. Let me read that. Or, oh, this is where they appeared in one of the cartoon, you know, Iron Man shows from, you know, years past or whatever.
Exactly. You know, like I said, it's one of those Easter eggs or, you know, they never show you what happened. I mean, you never know.
Yeah, like it's actually, well, clicking on it, I think it says, and I didn't even remember this to be completely honest, I think, spoiler, I think the character comes back one other time, which again, I didn't even remember, but even still, one other appearance isn't enough to make a recurring character or villain or whatever.
No, definitely not, but, you know, definitely, again, I don't know what happens, I guess. Shit, maybe I did see it and I just don't remember it.
I don't think you've seen it yet.
Okay. But my point is unless they, you know, like you said, it's a little Easter egg, it's a little this, it's a character that's not got a big, you know, origin or name, and they can do that. They can throw it in there. Boom.
And like we said, we don't, you know, can't blame them for it. They have such a wide range of things. Why not include, you know, a little Easter egg for the quote unquote fanboys out there.
And it's not like they could never use the, like, just think they could use a character in a movie one day and the character could talk about as a kid fucking going to the school.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's that Easter egg. They definitely, doing that is nice because it leaves them the option to do something or not do something, but either way it was there.
Exactly. One of the other big things I like, here's my transition. You ready for this? One of the other big things in terms of Easter eggs that I always like in these Marvel projects is a cameo appearance by Stan Lee, which is exactly what we finally got in the next episode, which is Trax, which, much like many episodes with regards to this series, it's actually T.R. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but each letter has a dot after it, as if Trax stands for something, much like S.H.I.E.L.D. This episode is one that I have been waiting for. There was a major moment in this one that I remembered from the very beginning of the series. And one of the things, like Kevin and I talked about in the early ones, where certain things happen and you didn't remember, especially going back and rewatching it, you didn't remember, oh, this happened, you know, as early as episode 2 or 3, or oh, that character was introduced so early on. I actually didn't remember that it took until this one, which is episode 13, there's the picture in my head was where Ward and Coulson jump off the train. They get hit with that like bomb-looking thing. It's not a bomb, but you know, it right, seems like a bomb to them. And then suddenly the train is gone. And then come to find out over the course of the episode, they were actually frozen, basically, and it was a version of what they keep calling the Night-Night gun. So ever since the Night-Night gun was introduced so many episodes ago, all I kept thinking was, when does this bomb and the train episode happen? Because I remember that was the next sort of evolution of that technology. So this was one of the episodes that I was really looking forward to. And this is another one that doesn't quite, I'm not gonna say it does or doesn't move the story forward. It's very much a character one, but this is an episode that I feel like you could show almost anybody and they could probably get it, because this is very much like, even though it's a sort of one-off and it is almost a case of the week, it has that sort of cinematic thing. Like I looked at it almost like a Tarantino movie, because you see the same things happen at different times from different perspectives and whatever.
I love that. I fucking love that, man. Honestly, I do. I do. I love it.
I
enjoyed this episode greatly. Everything about it. We got the Stanley cameo, like you said. You know, the pairing up of everybody. You know, the May Award, their sexual tension keeps going on. That scene where fucking they're doing bad accents. Sky tries to do a bad accent or something.
Oh, it's when he says to her, "How's your Scottish?" And I cringed at that.
Yo, but it's just funny. Like, the whole setup was funny. I like, you know, because at first I didn't know what was going on. Like, they like you said, like, you don't realize they're frozen at first. Like, right. I didn't realize that shit at first. I was like, the fuck just happened? So it took me a minute. You know, the whole train thing is great. Takes up most of the episode.
Well, so here's the question. And this is something I don't know if we could pinpoint it exactly. Maybe it's the fact that, you know, we see the same story from different perspective, or not the same story, but like the same time frame from different perspectives or whatever. But this episode, like I said, this one is very much case of the week as well. And we said in the previous one, we didn't like the case of the week thing. We liked the you know, serialized thing. But what is it about this one that we're okay with it, even though, as we said, it's kind of like a one-off sort of thing?
I think you said it best, because you looked at it like a Quentin Tarantino-ish film, because it's cinematic. It's the way it's shot. It's the fast-paced, I guess, storyline. Like, I can see the same thing over and over again from different points of view because of how quickly it's going about. And I need to see that because I have questions about the storyline. But I'm okay with it because of the way it's shot. And this, you know, it's – that has everything. I feel like it flows. It has a very good flow to it. You know, the Ward and Coulson on the – this is that point. I believe we talked about this. I thought we did. This is where they're on the bus together. And they're trying to figure out the table.
Yes. Love that.
Yo, and Ward acts like he fucking knew what was up with Cole's, like, I couldn't even figure out how to turn it on or whatever. Like,
yeah, that whole, fantastic that, between the two of them.
You know, we find out, this is something we haven't heard about in a very long time. When Ward fucking says something, Coulson threatens to send him somewhere in Alaska, where we find out Abomination is being held.
Yes, I was going to bring, I'm actually looking at that exact note. I was going to bring that up, and this is something actually, the episode on The Incredible Hulk I did with Kevin, and we talked about the fact that many people, and I'll ask you, because you weren't on some of the early ones, but you're a big MCU fan. Obviously, we know that film, even though it's not Ruffalo as the Hulk, we know that that film counts in the MCU. We see Thunderbolt Ross comes back. We see sort of references to it in the Avengers and things like that. We also have this little tie-in here. But what I don't know if you've ever experienced this with people when they either rewatch or when they're first getting into the MCU or whatever. I've known many people. I used to work with a guy who tried arguing with me that because Mark Ruffalo is the Incredible Hulk in the Avengers, and there's almost no other connection. This was before Thunderbolt Ross came back in some of the later Avenger movies, spoiler for anybody out there, but almost zero connection between, other than the brief Iron Man cameo, there was almost zero connection between the Incredible Hulk, the Ed Norton one, and the rest of the MCU. Someone that I used to work with tried arguing with me that movie doesn't count within the MCU. I think it does. It obviously does. We've seen several references to it and sort of continuations of that story. Have you ever come across someone like this, and how do you try to convince them otherwise?
I mean, I've had one or two people, but most of the people I know that it counts and, you know, I mean, are a little educated. I tell people, hey, look, it counts. If you don't want to say it doesn't count, then don't say it doesn't count. But it counts. It ties in. They've tied it in. You know, like you said, there's not a lot of tie-in, but they have. They've done it just enough, and they did it a little more as later on, but they did it just enough so that the MCU tied it in as part of the MCU. So it fucking counts.
I agree. Like I said, and I've said this before.
Marvel did that. They did that. It counts. Whatever you're saying, it doesn't count because of a different actor. Sorry, it does. That shit happens all the time. They change actors in the middle of shows and fucking TV. Look, you're going to tell me, oh, War Machine's not War Machine because now he's Don Cheadle? Get the fuck out of town. No, everybody took that and accepted it and ran with it and was okay with it.
No, I agree. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to laugh too loud, but I am laughing over here because I agree.
You know, I that's the thing I hate sometimes is how it's almost like a double standard. You're okay with one, but you're not okay with the other. Like, why are you not okay with it? It's because it was a solo movie. No, look, it's the same character played by a different person in real life, but it's the same character. That shit still happened to the same character.
Well, yeah, no, but I know, and I'm not saying this that I believe this, but I know like other people are like, oh, well, then does the Ang Lee Hulk count? No, it doesn't, because it doesn't fit within the same universe. There are specific things that make it within the same universe. They reference the same things. Iron Man 2 features a scene from that Hulk movie. These are all things, by the way, for anybody listening, I've talked about in several past episodes of the show. You could hear me go more in depth about it there. But no, I very much agree that it counts. I actually forgot that this little reference was made.
So now they just tied it back in. They tied it in.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I like the fact that this cements it now.
Like, come on, like, man, people, get with the program. Back to this episode.
I was gonna say one of the things that I really like about this, and it's something that I've asked all the guests so far on the show. What did you think about this in general, what do you think about the concept of, and this one in particular, the Stan Lee cameos? You were actually telling me before we started the episode, you've actually met him before.
Yeah, I mean, we met him in a comic. Me and Kevin, we went to Baltimore Comic-Con, I believe. We did a meet and greet with him there. It was cool. We did the whole shebang. We met him for the signing. We met him for a picture. So we actually, you know, met him more than once during the day, and then with a Q&A. And I'll tell you what, when we met him at that time period, and this was a few years ago, when we first met him, I thought they were going to pick his hand up and do the sign. Someone was going to sign, like, or have their hand through it. The dude didn't even look like he was moving. I hate to say it, rest in peace. I'm not speaking ill. And then when we met him for the picture, he had a little bit more life into him, but he still wasn't like there. When we got to the Q&A at the end of the day, it was like it took him all day to wake up. He was a fucking off the wall. He was going 100 miles an hour. And it's crazy because he would remember. This man would remember shit that he drew in comic books and page numbers and shit. But wouldn't remember when him and fucking Jack Kirby first met, or fucking some big thing Kirby fucking tried, like some weird shit. He wouldn't remember half the shit that was talked about, but he would reference page numbers and cell numbers and what he put in the bubble and shit. Fucking genius mind. It was a good experience. And so I always like his cameos. I'm glad they did this cameo. And when we get to the end, I'll bring up another fact about why I like this cameo.
Well, so one of the things...
But there are a couple more, like, things on this episode that happened that we didn't get to.
Oh, no, of course. I just want to very briefly about this cameo. And I referenced it a little bit earlier, and obviously in a past episode, where there was the Nick Fury cameo and whatever. And being somebody who reads, like a TV guide website or Entertainment Weekly, things like that, it was definitely reported on early on that he was going to be making a cameo. But I remember until it was announced, because they didn't necessarily say what he was going to be doing, but it was announced that he was going to make a cameo. And I know people were kind of speculating, oh, he hasn't made an appearance. Does that mean he doesn't like this show, or, you know, all this other stuff? Because his name is one of the, you know, because it's based off of the concept of the comics, not necessarily any particular characters.
Right.
So it's, you know, based on the comics by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And so people would, you know, speculate, oh, maybe he doesn't like the show, maybe he doesn't endorse it, whatever. And so then he finally made the cameo, and then people were like, oh, now he likes the show. And I'm just thinking to myself, he's a busy man. Like, when this all happened, I remember, I was just like thinking to myself, like, he was a busy man. Like, he goes to, you know, well, used to obviously go to like all these cons, and he would be doing all sorts of stuff. Like, and the guy was very, very old. Like, let him enjoy not having to do things like make a cameo in a TV show. He'll make a cameo when he wants to make a cameo, or when it's right, or whatever. I like the fact that he makes the cameos in the things. I think it's one of those sorts of, like, a, maybe it is a seal of approval sort of thing or whatever, but it is sort of like a, you know, now, you know, like we referenced how they do like little, you know, Easter eggs of character names and things. I think a Stan Lee cameo is like, you know, a hallmark of these things. And I think this is just one more thing to, again, sort of cement this as an official Marvel Cinematic Universe thing. We've already had several appearances of characters from the films, like Fury, like Maria Hill, whatever, and now we've had a Stan Lee cameo, and it's just one more kind of feather in the cap of, this is a real official thing that everybody should be on board with.
You're right. It is a stamp of approval. That's why I love when he does his stuff for Kevin Smith.
Yes.
It, you know, I really do fucking, I love that shit. So it is, it is. This is a real live show, people. If you're listening, this is a great show. From someone watching it for the first time, we're at episode 13 tracks. Watch it. Stan Lee cameo. Couple big things coming up here. This is where we get the leg for Peterson.
Yep.
Which, that's pretty cool. Goes on. That's like, it's pretty cool, you know. We get a little more Deathlok going on.
Well, that's it. By the end of this one, that's when we find out that that's what the whole thing is. It is Project Deathlok.
Deathlok, yeah. It like zooms in or something, doesn't it?
Yeah.
On the leg, that's what it is. And then big, you know, big thing we get is Quinn shoots fucking Sky.
Yeah.
That's kind of how we, you know, they stick her in that tube. You know, we don't get a lot of answers about that tube. I mean, I know that it's some kind of healing tube, but like, they just stick her in there and she starts breathing immediately. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think Simmons says something about like, it either is, or it's a sort of, incubation chamber.
Is that what you're, okay,
thing. Yeah,
so that's how we get the, I mean, which is kind of big, Sky getting shot. I mean, that's a big, you know, big cliffhanger to end a great episode. Again, you know, even though an episode a week, great way to end the episode.
And I just looking really quick, there was actually, it kind of makes sense, sort of like the one of the previous ones, and then the first one that we talked about, in this, there was the, like, Christmas break. There was about a month gap between this one and then the next one, when we go to talk about that in the next podcast episode. But yeah, I liked the fact that one of the things that we got in this that we don't necessarily see often, and we sort of touched on it before, we get to see Coulson and Ward, which we previously saw when they did the fake lottery thing, you know, but we also get to see Sky and Fitz, which isn't a team that we would often see, because it's like we've seen obviously Fitzsimmons together, we've seen Ward and Fitz, but we don't really get to see Sky and Fitz that often, especially after I think there was a mention in a previous one where like he might have had a crush on her, but that seems to be gone by now as well.
Oh yeah, because they go up to the mansion and he's kind of like scared and shit, right?
Yeah, but he has to like put on like a brave face, like he gives her the gun because he's like, oh, I'm gonna like, you know, he keeps saying he wants to do things with his bare hands.
So yeah, no, I remember that now. You're right. It's good. It's a good episode.
And like I said, it's kind of odd because it very much has that case of the week thing. Look, like we said, we didn't necessarily like it in the previous one, but I think this one, just because it's case of the week. It just has that feeling, that, like I said, cinematic feeling, but it also has that feeling like you can show this episode to almost anybody, you know, like people say, you know, I know you weren't on Lost with Friends, but I know you're a big Lost fan. People say about the episode The Constant, for those of you who aren't Lost fans, just bear with me here for a second. But people say The Constant is one of those episodes. It's not only one of the best of the series, but it's one of those episodes that's standalone enough that you can show somebody, give them the basic information, and they can enjoy the episode. And I feel like this has that more so than the previous one, because the previous one you have to maybe understand where Ward is coming from, where Fitzsimmons is coming from, what SHIELD Academy is, and all this other stuff. Whereas with this one, it's just straightforward as this is the tough guy, here's where he is on the train. This is the boss, here's where he is on the train. And you know what I mean? It's just these different sort of moments of each of them on the train for pretty much the whole first half of the episode. And then the second half is, let's go get Sky and Fitz.
Right. No one. Yeah, you're right. It's that's perfectly put, the way that's a great analogy. Again, I enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, no, I liked it as well. And like I said, this was one that I was sort of waiting for, because ever since, you know, in doing this rewatch, ever since the talk of the Night-Night gun, I had remembered that there was this like bomb type thing, and I just couldn't and then, you know, the shot of the train disappearing, and I just couldn't remember when it was. One of the other things I actually thought about you in particular when I was watching these earlier, because I think, I don't know if we talked about it on mic, I can't remember right now, but we talked about when we had the previous episode that we did, we talked about liking bloopers and outtakes and things like that. And all I could think of was that scene like that we talked about earlier with Ward and Coulson at the 3D table thing, and watching them try to figure out how to expand the thing. And just in my mind, all I'm picturing is the two of them doing that, knowing that those graphics aren't really there. That sort of table doesn't really exist. So just watching the two actors just do that with their hands without the effects would probably be hilarious.
Hilarious. And they probably were just like, the thing is that, yeah, I think we talked about it off because we were talking about different series and stuff, but to see them do that, I guarantee it was just like, here, you guys got to be like, they probably had a little free range to like do some different stuff and have fun with that, because it probably was hilarious, because it's hilarious to watch it in the show. So it had to have been hysterical watching them just stand over nothing and do that.
Yeah. But yeah, so I was thinking of you when I was watching that, because like I said, I know we had had that conversation, and I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned it to you and see if you thought the same thing.
Now that you brought it up, I do. I can see that. That's a great. Again, that was one of my favorite. I'm pretty sure we talked about this moment off mic before, after an episode before. I think when they worked together before, when we got off, I mentioned that I liked this moment later on too, because I'd already reached this point.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoyed that whole table moment with the two of them. That, like, it was just fun. That was a good comedy moment in the show. It broke it up. You know, we've had a lot of like action and stuff going on.
I think that's another part of the positive of this episode is there's a lot more action. Whereas even the previous one, there was action, but it seemed to be a lot more sort of talking, which is fine. But I think you need a balance. I think this one had a really, really good balance because it had your action, it had your comedy, it had, you know, your exposition and whatever. Whereas the previous one, even, which we said we didn't like so much, I feel like a lot of that was just exposition.
Yeah. And it shows you don't need most of this was done on the train, so you don't even need multiple locations to do a lot of action.
And that's something, and again, it's something that you and I and even Kevin, when he was on some of these, that we've talked about where, you know, with regards to this show. And I don't mean to keep, you know, hyping up how good the show is, but it's just one of those things where we've talked about it before. People didn't like it or they fell off or whatever. I think this show does these sorts of things really well. It has its action, it has its comedy, it shows, like you said, you don't need that many sets. If you're looking for an Iron Man or a Captain America, that's not what this show is. But if you go into this show with the right expectations, I think it will exceed those expectations, or at least, the very least, live up to them, because this show does what it can really, really well.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And, you know, I contribute that to, you know, they have, you know, I did a little bit of my own Kevin research on some of these episodes, and I'm beginning to understand why I like this show more and more and more. Because I'm seeing what these writers and directors have done before, so I understand now why I like this more and more and more.
Well, do we have anything else on this episode? I know you said you had at least one more thing, potentially, with regards to the Stan Lee cameo, but was there anything that we didn't really cover with the episode tracks?
No, I mean, you know, I feel like we covered enough and still, you know, I feel like we do with a lot of the episodes. We, you know, we do talk about what goes on in the episode a lot, but we also leave a lot of there to be seen if, you know, you're still watching or you want to go back and watch. You know, we leave a lot that we don't speak of to be seen. And I, you know, I kind of enjoy that.
The only other thing, of course, being the last scene, because the entire time, and we've talked about it before, we even talked about it earlier in this episode, Mike Peterson, everything he does for his kid. And, you know, we see, as we talked about, he has the eye implant now and all this sort of stuff. And he asks permission to interact with his son, and he's told not yet. And then that's when we see the zoom in on the Cybertech thing, and then it says Project Deathlock. And again, I think that's one of those good scenes that it gives us a bit of a character moment for Mike Peterson, but it also definitely sets up what we're going to see in some of these next batches of episodes.
Yeah, I'm excited.
But if there isn't anything else with regards to this episode, you said you did some Kevin, you actually messaged that to me even before we started, that you did some Kevin style research. So I'm interested. I'm ready for you to hit me with it whenever you are.
Okay, well, since we're on it, I'm going to go backwards since we kind of talked about tracks last. I'm going to go backwards since we're at tracks right now.
Okay.
Speaking that you liked it being cinematic, the director, Paul Edwards, has done Once Upon a Time, did 10 episodes of Lost, Fringe, and Heroes, which those are all some of my top shows. So, you know, when I found all that out, I enjoyed that. Now I understand why this episode is shot very well, and I like it. Now, I didn't look to see who the other ones were. There are other ones credited, but the number one writer for this episode credited is Stan Lee.
Okay.
Which is his cameo episode, which is cool. You know, we were talking about validation earlier and stuff like that. And people, I mean, if he's credited, I'm sure if he's credited as writing, I'm sure he wrote at least his cameo part.
I mean, I could totally see that. Yeah, like it would make sense that he would have something.
He's not credited as writing any of the other episodes that I looked up, at least out of these.
Okay.
So it definitely had to do with that one as a cameo. Those were the little fun facts about that episode. I mean, I didn't get too deep, but, you know, because I liked the way that one was shot, I did look at the director and I saw all of those. I didn't break down all the episodes because, you know, he's done 10 episodes of Lost, not a lot, but still a good amount. Fringe did quite a few and Heroes. And I did the same thing with the other episodes as well. I looked into the writers and directors over here on Seeds. I'm going to butcher these names. this Monica Owosu Breen.
Yeah, I've never known how to pronounce that. I know the name, I recognize from other credits. I've never known how to pronounce it, though.
I knew you would know it because of all the stuff she did on. I mean, she was on Lost, the third season. She did Fringe, and she did Revolutions. I mean, those are all Abrams shows, you know. And then this dude, Kenneth Fink, who directed it, he also did some Fringe. So once again, and then Jed Whedon, which if you don't know some of the stuff he's done, I mean, we all know who his brother is, so.
Yes, and of course, as I've said many times, Jed Whedon, his wife Marissa, and a producer named Jeffrey Bell, they are what's called the showrunners of this, meaning top executive producers. They come up with sort of the arcs of the stories and things like that. So to me, any episode that, and this is with any show, in my opinion, you could even say with Lost, if you see like Damon and Carlton, who, you know, were the showrunners on there, if they have like their names as like a writer or whatever in the credits, you know that, to me at least, it's not only going to be a good, like a very good episode, but it's probably going to have something that's very poignant. Which is kind of ironic because it was Seeds, which is the one we said we didn't like so much.
That's what I was about to say. But you're right. But the back core story that we didn't like, or that we do like, that's going on there, makes sense because that's the real, like I said, there's the real meat there.
Yes.
So you do have that, and the magical place. The only thing I found out about the director, I really like Kevin Hook. Yeah, he's from Philly. He's a Philly guy, like that. And he did Prison Break. I'm a real big Prison Break. He did some episodes of Prison Break. I'm a big fan of that. And then this Paul.
Me nor Kevin in anything that we've ever talked about this guy in, we've never been able to figure it out.
Zabowski. Zabowski. Paul Zabowski. Come on down, Paul Zabowski. He did. As you know, he did Lost episodes. I'm sure you know which ones then. But, you know, he did Jughead, Namaste, and Follow the Leader, you know, as another Lostie. I just found, you know, I like seeing that, you know, it's like a big family.
Yes.
With a lot of these shows, which makes sense because a lot of them, these are a lot of the same shows that I like, and it makes sense. But I know I didn't do as good as Kevin, but hey, I did a little bit more homework.
Hey, I liked it. And I like when I can, you know, comment on, like, cause you said, you know, you just said to me like, oh, you probably know this. And like, I do, but I like when other people, you know, will say they did this, they did that. Cause a lot of times and it's probably an insecurity of mine, I have a lot of that knowledge. And whenever I tell people stuff, they'll look at me incredibly strangely as if to be like, why do you know this? And you and I have talked about this before. Like, what is, yeah. what don't I have in my head that I'm remembering all of this quote unquote useless information? So when somebody else has this information and I can, you know, maybe piggyback off of it, I feel a little bit better about myself because I feel like people aren't judging me as much.
No, I get it. Trust me. We've talked about it. I know when I start telling movies and people are like, oh, I love that movie. And I'm like, oh, yeah, and so-and-so's in it with this person. It was directed by this person. And you know they shot it, and they're like, how do you know this? And I'm like, how do I know this? I'm not sure, but I probably forgot something very meaningful to know this, but I know it.
How I feel.
I'll be honest with you. It's cool because, you know, hearing Kevin do it and you guys talk about it, it kind of like was like, oh, that's cool. And then, you know, doing the little bit of the research myself, like, you know, I that's just the notes that I took. You know, I stumbled down those rabbit holes a little further. I looked at some more stuff, read a little bit more because it interests me. And I was like, oh, shit, this is cool. Like, you know, it's cool to see these people doing this stuff or, you know, there's plenty more credits. They all have a lot more credits than that. With great shows and stuff that would probably interest other people and might get other people hooked on this, but they weren't stuff that I was really.
Oh yeah, like I saw one of them, one of the directors did like Dawson's Creek and things like that, which don't get me wrong, you know, at a certain time, Dawson's Creek was like the thing, but
it was the shit.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily like if you're going to say, oh man, if you loved Dawson's Creek, you're going to love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It doesn't necessarily have the same effect as if you like Lost or Fringe, you're going to like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. There's at least a similarity there.
They always pacey wrong. They did it wrong. Yeah, no, you're right. If you love Dawson's Creek and One Tree Hill.
Which I do.
Hey, look, dude. Yo, I got a boy fucking in high school, man. He used to be like, yeah, man, I gotta go home and watch One Tree Hill with my girl. And I'd be like, what? You really watch that show? Your girl makes you watch that? He's like, nah, I make her watch it. Man, it's not my cup of tea, but listen, to each their own.
I'm sure
it's well written, but.
Very quick aside, I started watching. That was actually the first show that I watched that was my show. You know what I mean? Like, none of my friends really watched it. Like, nobody in my family watched it. But I made it so that, like, for me, it was appointment TV. Almost anything else, whether it was wrestling or, you know, whatever. Like, Friends was a big thing in my house. Like, all that stuff. Like, that was stuff my parents watched and got me into or whatever. One Tree Hill was, like, my first show, and it was one that I like sort of started deep diving into. How did this get created? What else were these actors in and whatever? And at the same time, and that's kind of like I said, that kind of kicked me off to be able to know or you know, to start to learn this person worked on this show and whatever. One of my best friends at the time watched The OC, which was the same time frame. But on a different, you know, it was on Fox versus the WB or CW or whatever. And so one week he was over and I had him watch One Tree Hill and he had me watch The OC. And at the time, neither of us liked each other's shows, even though there was a lot of similarities between the two of them. But now, all these years later, I'm pretty sure we've both watched both shows and ended up liking them. So it's just one of those funny things how that kind of works out.
The OC was huge, man. That shit went on forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm old school, man. I grew up watching 90210.
So did I. I mean, yes.
Like, you know, that was my shit.
But do we have anything else that we want to talk about with regards to episodes 11, 12, and 13 for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I mean, like I said, it's us grouping them. It was like a little roller coaster, you know. They were good.
So
it's kept me going. It kept me going, and I'll give you that. We learned enough. If you're watching it, if this is your first time, you should know at this point, it's given you enough to keep you going, to keep you interested. It's got me intrigued. You know, I sit through, you know, the case of the week, you know, because like we found out, we get a good case of the week every now and then. So, I mean, and all in all, it's, again, I'm glad you guys put me on to it. It's been very enjoyable. And, you know, I'm looking forward to continuing to watch the show.
And we should tell people, if they're not necessarily that keen on the case of the week, we are very close to the point, and it's something that we kind of teased in the early episodes, and if you're a fan of the films, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If this is your first time watching like the entirety of Marvel stuff, I won't give too much away. I know, because he's ahead of where we are in the rewatch, I know Ellsworth will know exactly what I'm talking about. We're the next batch of episodes we're going to do, which is going to be episodes 14, 15, and 16, those being Tahiti, but again, it's T.H. whatever. I'm not, or T. whatever. I'm not going to spell it out. But Tahiti, Yes Men, and End of the Beginning. And that is right before, those are the last batches, or that's the last batch of episodes right before Captain America, the Winter Soldier. So right at the end of that, we're going to get a big cliffhanger. I don't want to necessarily say too much. And then Captain America, the Winter Soldier happens. And then that is the point where a lot of people who stuck with the show originally will agree that's the point where the show picked up. And I know some people will say, well, wait a minute, by episode 17, the show picked up. And if you understand what happens in Captain America, and knowing that basically Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did 16 episodes where they knew this thing was coming, and again, we'll discuss this in future episodes, they knew that this was coming, and yeah, they kind of had to kick the can down the road, as it were, until they could really get to the this big twist that they had in their back pocket the whole time. But yeah, so the next batch of episodes we're gonna do is gonna be right before that big turn and leave us on a big cliffhanger there. And I don't know about you, Ellsworth, but I'm really excited to sort of get into these next batches of episodes, and even Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Oh, without a doubt. You couldn't have said it better. It definitely kicks up a notch. You know, it's almost as if they knew they needed to get the show out when they did, because they knew this is what they wanted to do with it almost.
Yeah.
You know how we talked about this before? It's like, you guys said they reach a certain point where they kind of were able to start doing whatever they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't happen for a little bit longer, but it's, once this happens, I feel like, yeah, the restriction, I feel like some cuffs were taken off. The restrictions, there was a little more freedom here.
I would absolutely agree. Like, I think once the big twist happens, it was okay. Now we can really, because like you said, yeah, the restraints were taken off, because they knew they had this twist and they couldn't really comment on it, but they had to do, you know, you have to do X amount of episodes per season or whatever. Had they started the show in, say, January, as opposed to a September thing or whatever it was, they probably could have gotten to that twist a lot sooner. Maybe a lot more people would have stuck around with it. So that's why there is some of these middle episodes where they're okay, but not great and whatever. But it's just, like we said, I think these episodes that we've been covering, not so bad, but it definitely will start to pick up very, very soon.
I kind of have to say, I don't think the twist would be as good had it happened sooner if they would have done that. I think even though we've had some so-so episodes, the amount of time we've had to grow with these characters, with what's to come with the twist, makes it that much better. Because we had that much more time with these people to actually gain some kind of feeling and, you know, have some kind of idea of who these people are and what they stand for. So I feel like if it happened any faster or sooner, we might not have the attachment to the people that we have.
Actually, I'd probably give you that one. From a character perspective, yes. I just feel like from sort of the reaction that some people have given in terms of storylines, and this is something, that, again, we've talked about where they may be looking at it from, you know, the storyline didn't keep me interested because they didn't know the characters. But like, I would definitely agree with you. We've gotten the time now by this point where, you know, we're at episode 13 and then leading into 14, 15, 16, we've gotten to know the characters. So we do have a bit more of a connection. But I think for people who wanted the more storyline element of it, it would have been better for them. But I do like the way they did it because you're right. We did get to know these characters a lot better.
People just want instant gratification, and it's not as sweet as letting it build.
Hey man,
I know you agree, bro. I know you do. I'm making sure the world hears it, bro.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm a professional wrestling fan. I listen to some wrestling podcasts from people who were in creative positions, and they talk about that quite a bit. How back in the day, you could let and it's with any form of television. I just happened to be listening to something earlier today about it. You have to let a good storyline or a good character arc build. Just because it doesn't work after, you know, two episodes doesn't mean you should just cancel the whole thing.
No, you gotta let that build. You gotta let it simmer. You gotta let, like, people sometimes aren't, even back then, even today, they don't know right away. Like, even with this world of instant gratification, sometimes people don't know right away. You gotta give it a little bit of time and let it simmer for a minute.
Well, this is just a very quick thing. It's on this topic, but there was a show that my dad and I used to watch years ago. It was actually, it's going to sound weird that two grown men were watching it, but it was the Boy Meets World sequel show on Disney Channel, Girl Meets World. Okay. And they were doing a love triangle between the two girl best friends and the boy that they liked. And my dad was a big Boy Meets World fan, but he was not happy about the fact that they were doing this and they were stretching it out for so long. He's like, they need to just get rid of this story, whatever. And I said, right, but the thing you don't realize is by the time we're watching this, like, they already filmed this months ago. So you could be as upset as you want. They're already past this storyline in terms of where they are in production. So right. By this point, you kind of just have to ride it out. Like,
yeah, you just sit back and you just enjoy the story they're telling you. You're not, it's not make a story up as you go. Sorry.
Yeah.
You know, but that's, and I get both sides sometimes, but that's something we all, like, people in general. And, you know, I was guilty for a long time. I've gotten a lot better. It's just, sit back and enjoy it for what it is, you know.
And that doesn't mean that you have to like every storyline.
No, you don't gotta like it. Shit, you might watch the whole thing and be like, I don't like it. Cool. Wasn't for you. Not a problem. Like, that's all it needs to be, though.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's just where I'm at. Like, if I don't like something, I'll be like, cool. I didn't like that. Wasn't for me.
Oh, you would not believe how many times I have people where I'll say, I don't like this show or I don't like this musical artist, and it immediately turns into, how could you hate them? Well, I didn't say I hated them. Didn't even say that I dislike it. It's just, it's not my thing. You and I have talked about this before. I've talked about it on many of the shows that I do. I'm not a big fan of Breaking Bad. I get it. I get why a lot of people like it. I watched the entire thing. It just isn't necessarily my thing, but it's like I said, I watch it. I say, oh, I get why people would like this. It's just not my thing. I have the same thoughts about The Walking Dead. I've seen enough. It's not my thing. I don't hate it. Good for them. They've gone however many years that they've gone. I think that's fantastic. It's just not my thing. But people immediately turn it into, well, why do you hate this or whatever? And even with regards to this, you know, this show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., when people will say, oh, you know, it's not really my thing. Oh, it didn't keep my interest. I'm not immediately out there going, oh, why do you hate it? Because I understand the concept that they just didn't like it, or they just didn't get, right. Maybe they didn't give it the chance, or they did and just didn't enjoy it. Because I'm in this one way only, because I'll never admit that I'm a mature person, but in this one way only, I'm mature enough to understand the difference between not being interested in something and hating something.
100. And that's, you know, that's what the world needs to just understand, that you don't hate something just because you're not interested in it or you don't like it. It doesn't mean you hate it. Doesn't mean you don't want it to be there or you want it to go away. Like, I just don't, you know, I have a different opinion than Breaking Bad, but that's cool. I don't really care. That's your opinion, bro. Like, and if somebody says, oh, you're not going to ask me why I don't? No. If you want to talk about it, we'll talk about it. But at the end of the day, if you say you don't like something, cool. I'm not going to ask you why or pressure you this, that, and the other. Like, it's the same with, like, if you want to go home or, you know, you don't want to be out, or, you know, for those who drink, your friends are like, oh, you want another drink? And you're like, no. And it's, well, why not? It's that whole scenario. Like, people just need to understand when someone says no or this, that why can't it just be like, okay, cool.
Yeah, and like,
just let it be cool.
Like, realistically, if you wanted to ask me, hey, why don't you like Breaking Bad? I'll talk to you about it. Like, I don't have a problem with it, but I definitely agree. Like, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with saying, but, you know, are you okay? Why not? Like, with the drinking, you know, like, if and I've had that where I'm just like, you know what? No, I'm good this round. And I think, yeah, people need to agree that it's okay that you do or don't want to do a particular thing and not
get, you don't need,
like,
a reason.
Yeah.
I don't need a reason. I don't need to justify myself, just like I don't need you to justify yourself to me about why you do or do not like something. If you don't like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you don't like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. If you do, you do. You know, I wasn't, you know, listen, I didn't like I talked shit on Game of Thrones before I watched that show. I talked shit on Game of Thrones. My boy, why you want to watch some dumb shit like that? And then I sat home for 3 weeks and binge watched 5 seasons straight because I fell in love with it. Because I just was fucking being like, I wasn't opening up enough to just look at something. You know what I mean? Like, why do you like that? Like, you know, I stopped being that way. Like, you gotta fucking, you know, I'm sure you can tell me why you don't like Breaking Bad. You know, maybe we'll talk about it one day, you know?
Right.
I don't, you know, you don't like it. I liked it. I have a different opinion. It is what it is. Do I care to talk about it? Yeah, I can't. Maybe. If I do, I do. If I don't, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, like, I'm down to talk about things sometimes, but I'm also like, I don't have to.
Well, so, okay, so if people do want to talk to you about things, whether it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad or any of the stuff that we've talked about, where can they find you all across the internet?
You can get at me at Twitter, at TheMagician, TheMagishn, or Facebook and Instagram, Ellsworth Certified.
For me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at JPGRB. You can follow my secondary Instagram at JPCS.PICS. I try to take at least one picture a day of things I'm doing. A lot of food stuff going on there, and my personal thoughts and feelings on things going on in my life as well. For all clock shelves related things on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, it's at Clock Shelves. That's CLOCKSHELVES. Again, that's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. if you want to support, patreon.com/clockshelves. Once again, CLOCKSHELVES. And the central hub for everything, where you can hear all past episodes, get more information about everybody involved with all things that we do. It's clockshelves.com, CLOCKSHELVES.com. All right, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you once again, Ellsworth, for being on. I can't wait to get into the next few batches of episodes. As I said, we're also going to be covering, of course, Captain America, The Winter Soldier. I'm very excited about that. And until next time, I'll end it by saying thanks for listening, true believers.